Welcome back to the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. It is Friday morning, and as usual, I finished my radio show last night at about, well, I guess it was like 3:30 or something. So I'm up and running, getting ready to go have a great weekend, and wanted to throw this up for you guys at thebobdavispodcast.com. So this is the radio show number 39, and this is a special one because I actually created three segments, new content. So this is like a new podcast. So if you've been listening to the podcast on thebobdavispodcast.com, you know, the radio show idea is to take content from the podcast and bring it back to the radio. Well, you know, I didn't like one of the podcasts I did this week. It was okay. But I decided that I would create three new segments. So that is what this is. So let's get started with segment one. As the laundry cranks away in the washing machine in the background here in the studio. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. So if you listen to this show on the radio, you know that I bring content from my podcast back to the radio through this show. Now, a lot of broadcasters podcast, but their podcasts are usually repeats of already aired shows. I bring content from the podcast back to the radio. That said, this week, I'm going to do three segments of original content for the radio show, which won't mean much to you if you listen to the radio show. If you listen to this show on thebobdavispodcast.com or you listen to the podcasts, this is going to be brand new content for this week. Welcome. I just got back to home base here in the upper Midwest, Minneapolis and St. Paul, from a mega trip that started with a tour of the Great Lakes region back across Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana up to the Big Air Show at Oshkosh, and then ended with a trip to South Dakota in the Black Hills for the big motorcycle rally at Sturgis. For its part, the Great Lakes is becoming ground zero for both the Republicans and the Democrats in the national presidential election. Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, and to a slightly lesser extent, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee, the Mid-South, as well as parts of the industrial Deep South, are going to be key in this election. With some qualifications, the industrial heartland of America, both in the past and in our time. This is where both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are pushing their message of bringing back the jobs from China or creating jobs, re-educating displaced workers with more federal programs, or stimulating the economy with infrastructure investment, tax cuts, tax holidays, tax reform, and other nonsense. This week, I find it increasingly difficult to engage in political conversation on the podcasts. I characterize it as saying that my throat just closes up when I start talking about it, because I'm not really saying what I really feel. This is usually the result of a long trip as the adventure and fun of travel wears off and I return to the mundane, and I find politics to be increasingly mundane and therefore depressing. And as the old saying goes, most people don't pay attention to politics until well after the convention, once the campaigns get rolling. In radio, you're taught to be positive, but I'm just going to say, I don't know why anyone would want to pay attention to it anyway. No one wants to hear somebody raining on the parade in talk radio, but I'm about to. You're supposed to advocate, to push for a point of view, to demand action, tell people what to think and how to think. Well, I stopped doing that a long time ago because this is all people on television, online, and on the radio do anymore, and it's frankly unlistenable. It's sucks. And it's all the politicians do as well. I've been podcasting all week about how there is something missing in this presidential race, and it's been missing since the beginning. I know it's true, so I'm just going to say it. Our political system has managed to locate, promote, and nominate the two worst mainline candidates possible to, quote, lead, and I use the term lightly, this country for the next 4 years, perhaps the two worst mainline candidates in history. Now, I know that there are other candidates from smaller parties who, barring a miracle, won't go garner more than a small percentage of the vote in 50 states and several territories. So while they may be interesting, you can forget them being president or electing a majority of like-minded representatives to Congress in Washington or the legislatures and governor's mansions across the country to help them. The third-party dream is a pipe dream. All of these candidates, with few exceptions, and especially from the mainline parties, have mined the masses and fueled the flames of anger, resentment, fear, and frustration. All of these candidates are thriving on the ignorance of details on the issues. They're even encouraging ignorance on the issues. And so is the media, and everyone is to blame for it. The voters, the personalities, the politicians, the broadcasters, the executives, social media, the 24-hour our television news channels. You pick something from the grab bag or the pinata of the sociographics of America, if you will. When you travel this country, though, you meet decent people doing whatever it is they do on any given day. When you watch television or interact on social media, you encounter a feral, nasty, angry, aggressive population of trolls who fight and push and thrive on conflict as they promote their tribe and their message at what is perceived as anything that threatens them, any statement that threatens them. I don't care what your orientation is in social media America and split-screen debate on TV America and call in to the talk radio station and complain America, it is a ghetto of trolls. They are two different populations and yet perhaps the same people, these different Americas, these two Americas. America's political discourse is poisoned. It's depressing. It's frustrating. It is fueled every day by the freak show that is our politics and the so-called news cycle of bile that is called news, but is really just a rehash of the same nastiness you see in social media. It is not going to lead to anything good, and somebody needs to say it again and again and again. Come November, one of these people is going to become president. One of these parties is going to get hold of the White House and one or both of the houses of Congress. And as far as I can tell, neither one of them stands for a damn thing. When you talk to people in politics, they will spit out concepts and words in your face like messaging and sound bites or change. But mostly it is just plain sad. Sad, sad, sad that this is what we have become. So in this show, for the next half hour or so, I'm going to talk about what we need to do when this is all over. In my view, this election cycle is a bust. It's a bust out. The result of it isn't going to solve any of the real problems we faced. Honestly, I think we'll look back on this election and say it was the source of the catastrophe that will probably result. Yep. That's all of the candidates, no matter which one is president. So it's time to start talking about what we're going to build from the ashes. That's right, what we're going to build from the ashes. And I never thought I would say this because I was a big supporter of the political party system in this country, but the political party system in this country, as well as both political parties, are dead. It is not working. The political party system in this country is producing terrible candidates, terrible leaders, and terrible discourse. I don't care if they're running for dog catcher or president. The political party system has produced a media that covers politics, which, by the way, and incidentally, has a life or death power over you, literally, at the point of a gun. They treat it like sports, and they think it's funny. And no, they're not bad people. They're just not very strong. They know if they go along and get along, they'll keep their jobs and their futures and their families, and they will be set. It's not that they don't care about the country or the people. It's just that they do not have the courage to risk it all to stand up for something. At the root of this, that's what's wrong with the American political system and the American political discourse. We have allowed these people to lead us, and they are leading us to perdition. Now, we know something's wrong. We just don't know what to do about it. So I'm going to do these two segments, and then we're going to finish with something fun from my trip to Deadwood, South Dakota, by way of Sturgis. Because the America that I love is the America I find on the open road. Coming up, both mainline candidates made so-called major policy speeches about the economy. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcast, go to thebobdavispodcast.com. To sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter called The Bob Line, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. To hear more episodes of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, visit gcnlive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. Welcome back live in the studio, Friday morning. I was checking Instagram this morning and saw the very first post about the Minnesota State Fair. And so it is not too early to talk about having Ryan Plumbing and Heating from St. Paul check out your heating system. You know, we're probably at the peak of summer right now. And if you live in Minnesota, you know that right after the state fair, the weather changes. It's the weirdest thing. It's like somebody turns a switch or something. So, you know, usually I'd be talking about AC checks, but you can forget about that now because the thing is, even if it's hot, you're not going to need your AC much longer. What you need is you need a heating system check because we have something called climate change coming to Minnesota, and that means fall and winter, and that means your heating's got to be checked. So Ryan Plumbing and Heating is the people to do it, are the people to do it. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488 online. At ryanplumbing.com. You can click on that banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. It takes you to Ryan Plumbing. They go metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs, too, for four generations. What they do is quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And while they're checking your heating system, have them tell you about installing high-efficiency heating. Because while it may be expensive on the first pass, you save so much money over the next 4 or 5 years that it essentially pays for itself. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Yep, for four generations, metro-wide from St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Business or residential, reliable service for emergency service as well. Have them check your heating and get ready for the big cool-off, which is coming right after the state fair. RyanPlumbing.com. All right, here is segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. So both Republican and Democrat presidential candidates made big speeches about the U.S. economy this week. The U.S. economy, an economy that has failed to grow past 3% GDP per year for at least the last 8 years, and an economy that some believe has been propped up again and again by money printing by the Federal Reserve. Now, I know the U.S. Treasury prints currency. We're not talking about currency so much as we're talking about the Federal Reserve's mandate to regulate the banks, to be the bank of last resort, to set interest rates and loan money at discount rates to banks, and so on. Not only has non-farm U.S. productivity decreased over the last few quarters, productivity in the world economy continues to decrease, and we can't get ahead. So these policies basically aren't working. According to the central banks, the biggest risk in the world economy, in the U.S. economy, is deflation, and to fight it, they are trying to ignite inflation, but it is not working. While the president touts lower unemployment numbers in the U.S., his economy is producing lower quality part-time jobs, which push down unemployment numbers but aren't making anyone's life better. And it is true that almost 100 million people in the working age groups are out of the workforce, sidelined for whatever reason. Despite trillions of dollars in government spending to prime the pump by our government and governments across the world, and by and also interventions by central banks across the world, we just haven't seen much economic growth beyond 1.5 to 2%. And this is the source of the frustration of a lot of people, even if they don't understand that. If we had maintained 3.4 to 5% economic growth over the last 8 years, our economy would be at least $3.5 trillion bigger than it is today. That's a 20-plus trillion-dollar economy versus a $16 trillion economy. So no, we do not have a robust economy. Now, Donald Trump has proposed reducing the number of tax brackets to 3, which is the Paul Ryan congressional plan, a tax holiday for American companies to repatriate overseas holdings, and a reduction in the corporate tax from 35% or so, the highest in the world, to 15%. He also promises to spend more money than Hillary Clinton on rebuilding U.S. infrastructure, and she has proposed spending at least $250 billion, so that's a lot of billions. Trump also says he will bring American jobs back by getting rid of NAFTA and refusing to enact trade deals such as TPP. Hillary Clinton will spend billions on infrastructure, increase taxes on the rich and the middle class to pay for worker retraining programs, health care, and other government assistance. Both candidates claim that they are for the little guy, the forgotten man, the middle class, and so on. What's really funny is Donald Trump offering this plan to sign the congressional tax reform plan into law, forgetting that we passed the same kind of tax reform back in 1987, and here we are back in the same box. And while he's doing this, he is sponsoring the idea of spending billions rebuilding roads and bridges and then turning around and promoting trade protection policies. So in one fell swoop, he proposes supply-side tax reform, and then he goes ahead and spends all the proposed gains from tax cuts to rebuild roads and bridges. It was such an agglomeration of policy ideas that Trump's own economic advisor, Stephen Moore, was forced to write a piece this week proving that infrastructure spending is unnecessary. The idea of Hillary Clinton raising taxes and creating more government programs to help people surprises no one and will help no one. The basic problem with both candidates is they offer government solutions. They promote the idea that the government has a role to play in something that is a force of nature, like a storm or a river, the economy. What do I think we should do? First of all, I think it is, in fact, we who hold the key to solving these problems. What our legislatures and governors and presidents have to do is free us individually and free our capital so that we can do what we do. There should be no corporate tax, because a corporate tax is nothing more than an expense which makes the end product more expensive. There should be no death tax. Your money has already been taxed. You should be able to give it to your survivors. There should only really be a single flat income tax on everyone, with no deductions and no exceptions, and we should pay that tax on election day. And there shouldn't be any laws or penalties about where a company or individual wants to put its money, regardless of what they do or how they earn it. There should be no government retirement programs and government employee pensions. Social Security, Obamacare, Medicare, and Medicaid should be ended. Citizens should be able to invest their earnings in tax-free accounts, and at the end of their working years, they should be able to get all that money with interest tax-free because they've already paid income tax. Now, people are going to say, well, how is the government to pay for itself? Well, that's the point, isn't it? The government will have to live within its means with minimal borrowing. The Federal Reserve's mandate should be reduced to one mandate, sound money, which I personally think should be metals-based, and it will solve a lot of these problems. Taxation and regulation and control of capital by the government has created a situation where we have to petition the Crown for relief, and then they dole it out at their whim. That power must be permanently taken from government, period. You want economic growth? If you do that, you'll get it in spades. Now, has any of the mainline candidates proposed this? Anyone in either of the two parties that have controlled Congress for more than 100 years proposed this? Nope. And they won't. So what's the point of electing a government ist, a state ist, a dictator, either Democrat or Republican, that promises to bring your job from the bucket factory back, or your job from U.S. Steel or the Ford plant back. Well, it's not going to happen. Providing some BS program to teach steelworkers how to code, there will be more highly paid federal workers administering the programs than there will be success stories from it. What do these candidates propose? Nothing more than putting the post office in charge of our economic policy. And the fact is, one leads to Venezuela, the other one leads to tyranny. Either way, it doesn't promote life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, and when you think about the economy, the biggest problem with the economy, and this is where the deflation is coming from, is we're overcapacitized. We have too much oil and coal, there are too many factories, there's too much production. So going around and rebuilding infrastructure and building factories and bringing jobs back to the United States, if it's even possible, isn't going to fix the problem because the problem is overcapacity. Now, are these, is this list of policy ideas that I have a complete list? First of all, it's really to illustrate that we're not talking about the issues. That's why I did this list. The second thing is, what these are policies that would promote the individual and the individual's capital over government control of our capital, because they dole it out through tax policy and regulation and all these rules and regulations that only they understand. Well, that's why the economy continues to sort of just have moribund growth. We've got to release the individual to produce. And until we do that, we're not going to be producing much. But you don't hear any of these top candidates, proposing any of this stuff. They're just proposing more government solutions. So how are things going to be different regardless of who you vote for? Coming up, politicians push snake oil and chocolate-covered cakes, and they thrive on the worst of our nature. Don't you think that we're better than this? I hope so. Next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the podcast, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of this show, you visit gcnlive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show.
I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha!
Live in the studio, Friday morning, getting ready to roll segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, which includes about a half an hour or more of new content for people who listen to the podcast here at thebobdavispodcast.com. So I'm not going to Burning Man. I couldn't get tickets, but I am going to do Agora Fest, and I'm not sure what our fall plans for travel will be. But I do know one thing. I know that it will be in the fabulous 2000 Ford 450 Super Duty diesel mobile podcast command, which came from xgovernmentcars.com. Now, I've had three Crown Vics and, of course, mobile podcast command from xgovernment cars. They've been great. They have helped me. And we're talking about one owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs, the Chevy Impala V8s, the Dodge Chargers, which are amazing. They still have Crown Vics, police SUVs, the Ford police SUVs, and the Ford police sedans. And they have trucks, work vans, Yukons, Expeditions. You could go out and buy a brand new car, but the thing is, these cars are super dependable and it's economical, and I love my former fleet government maintained cars at all levels. And the thing is, if you need a car, you need a loan, if you have a job, you're going to be approved. They will approve all credit levels. Ex-government cars takes trades. They pay the highest value without all the bull. They also have the 3-day love it guarantee exclusively at ex-government cars. So get your butt down to ex-government cars, open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, or you can call them at 763-777-8782. I will see you on the road. And yep, I got the bullhorn.
ex-governmentcars.com.
Okay, here's segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Well, we're at the beginning of the end of a presidential election cycle in this country that has appealed not to our better nature as a nation, but to our base instincts. Somehow, we have chosen politicians through the primary process, through the party system, who really are mendacious, who make a habit of appealing to our fear, our frustrations, and our anger, and not to our better nature as human beings. I think it's true. The so-called traditional media, the new media, and social media thrive on partisans, advocacy, and on our base instincts, and we can't trust any of it. Politicians and the media have a negative, symbiotic relationship that only picks at the scabs of our problems, of our wounds. Now, I'm not one who views Franklin Roosevelt as one of our greatest presidents, but he is the one who said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And for his own purposes, what was he doing? He was appealing to the better instinct in all of us because people really were afraid in those days. When I travel, I see that America. I see a place where people help each other, where we know each other, and generally when we care for each other. And I don't care if it's a truck stop in South Dakota or a coffee store in Cleveland. It is a thriving, wealthy country where even the poor are immeasurably rich by world standards. Even though our economy is languishing, and it is languishing, and it's languishing exclusively because of the abysmal economic leadership from both political parties over the last 20 years. We, the citizens, we are a force of nature, whether we live in the most violent neighborhoods of Chicago and Los Angeles, or the wealthy suburbs in those towns, or any other city, or in the empty reaches of South Dakota or the American West. And I think it isn't necessarily the Founding Fathers. There's a lot of talk about the Founding Fathers, or General Grant, or Abe Lincoln, or Roosevelt, or Washington that built the greatest country on earth. They certainly played a role, but it was the citizens. It was the people who built this country. Our ancestors built it. And if we do our job right as citizens, our ancestors, our offspring, will build something even greater, if such a thing is possible. And I believe that we and they will. But it's going to take some work to get to it. Unfortunately, I think it's clear that our leaders don't believe that. Oh, they say that they do. They talk about American exceptionalism and everything, but everything they do leads to more control, more regulation, and more laws and programs with strings attached to make sure you're a good boy and that you do what you're supposed to do. The bottom line is they are terrified of 350 million people who wake up one day for some unknown reason, and say suddenly that they have had enough. So what they do is they buy us off, they scare us off, they divide us, they tax us, and generally they stop us from doing what it is that we do, which is acting as that force of nature. Now, they've been doing this in various forms since at least the Depression and maybe since the days of Woodrow Wilson at the turn of the 20th century. For my money, the theme that I believe in the most isn't the Founding Fathers. It isn't the Jefferson-Washington 1776 thing. It isn't the Civil War and Honest Abe. The theme I gravitate to the older I get is this theme of the American West. You know, I took a trip out west and I really felt it this time. People in those days took the risk. They left the comfort of their little towns and villages, and they risked everything for opportunity, first in the lands west of the original 13 colonies and south, and perhaps a little bit north, and then past the Mississippi into the Louisiana Purchase. They risked everything. Most of them risked their lives, and many lost their lives pursuing individual freedom and pure economic opportunity. There was no regulation. There were no rules. It wasn't easy. A lot of people failed. They were killed, or they died of disease and starvation or some other thing. But they kept coming. First, it was the adventurers, the mountain men, and then the miners that mined for gold and other minerals and so forth. And then you got the farmers and the ranchers and the businessmen, and ultimately civilization, albeit a different kind of civilization out west than necessarily out east. And I think one of the real great themes of the West was anybody who could pull his weight was welcome and considered a good fellow. Those that couldn't pull their weight just couldn't make it. And a lot that were worthy didn't. So if you couldn't pull your weight, or if you were weak in some way, shape, or form, you died. It was an all-inclusive, hell-bent for leather, reach for opportunity, and the reward that comes from working hard and working smart. And I just don't see our current crop of leaders appealing to that American instinct. That's what's exceptional about this country. Those people could write their own history, because they did. They did all that stuff. It wasn't all perfect and pretty, but that didn't stop them. Most of the time, as I said, there was no government and no law, but the law of nature. In time, law and government and civilization came, but they made it possible, those people who took the original risks, and they knew it. What happened to that America? How have we become this sniveling, nasty, angry people, afraid of competing with the rest of the world, afraid to stand up for what we believe in, afraid to learn about our world and live in it? What happened to the people that were strong and comfortable in their strength? How did we become an apocalyptic, conspiracy theory-loving, depressed bunch of, in Clint Eastwood's words, panty wastes? Well, I think part of it is that we have allowed Republicans and Democrats who espouse those principles to lead us for nearly 100 years. We have chosen people who really don't stand for anything, who live for nothing and are nothing, to become our leaders. And they have created a government that oppresses, takes from us, and divides us so they can continue to have those cushy jobs in Washington. And the bottom line is, and I don't know when it's going to happen, I don't know how it's going to happen, that we, the force of nature, are going to have to take it back. We're going to have to stand up and take our power back. We're going to have to do it through some kind of political process. We're going to have a movement that stands for something concrete, something real. To get that, we're going to have to study, we're going to have to learn, we're going to have to admit where and when we're wrong, we're going to have to look at both sides of the argument and be able to be conversant in both sides of the argument, and we're going to have to take the harder road to recreate something that will midwife a real future. Yes, we're on the edge of a great age of technologies that have the greatest promise for humanity that we have yet seen in the world. They are right there, just beyond our reach. And what's preventing us from getting to it is all of this government. We are not going to get to those solutions and those new ideas and those powerful new businesses when the new president is inaugurated in 2017. I think we're going to get much more of the same or chaos. And honestly, I don't know which party's candidate will bring what, but I don't think it's good. Sorry, but I don't. We're only going to get that when we have a movement of people that is the product of intelligent, determined, well-informed men and women who are fair and demand a government that works for us and serves us, and not the other way around. Now, I don't make these arguments to upset people. I'm not trying to convince you. I am not trying to advocate for these policies so much as I'm trying to get people to think about how we can be worthy of better leaders and how we can hold our leaders to a higher standard, to appeal to our better instinct, and to create for us, as a service to us, the people, the sovereign, the kinds of opportunities that we deserve and the kinds of opportunities that will propel this country into a much better future. So that's the purpose of this whole thing, not to make arguments. And to that end, I'm going to end the show with kind of a fun experience that I had when I was in Deadwood, South Dakota, where a lot of this Western history started. We're going to meet Colorado Charlie Utter on the streets of Deadwood, South Dakota, to talk about the theme of the Old West, opportunity for anyone if you're tough enough. Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcast's radio show. Okay, just ahead of segment four for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, live from the studio on Friday. I'm starting to wake up because I'm drinking my coffee. And I want to mention, I had such a great time this summer with all of these trips, and one of them, of course, was the air show at Oshkosh. And I have to mention that Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. If you're a pilot, the bottom line is you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings. And this thing, this angle of attack indicator, is all about showing you how much lift you have, which is so important in that final turn on final approach, because you need to know what your angle of attack or lift is. And it's a visual indicator, and it saves lives. I've heard more than one pilot talking about problems in general aviation with this final turn, because pilots think they know, they can feel this, and really, if you have a visual representation, it makes a huge difference. And Alpha's visual indicator is the best in the business. Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. They would like to get this into your plane today. Click on the Alpha Systems banners at thebobdavispodcast.com for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator. That will take you to Alpha's website, Alpha Systems website. And you can see there's all kinds of info and content there about how it works. AlphaSystems.com. Okay, I guess I'm going to roll segment four. This is the Colorado Charlie Utter interview, although I shortened this one down. I chopped it down a little bit, and it kind of hangs together a little bit better. And thanks again to Charlie, really the guy playing Colorado Charlie, because I never got his name. I don't think he wanted to give it to me. So here we go. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. The American West was a land of opportunity for people who were tough enough to take the risk. Last weekend, I spent some time during Sturgis 2016 in one of my favorite old Western haunts, even though it's just a few hundred miles west of Minnesota, Deadwood, South Dakota, where I met a character from the Old West on the streets, Colorado Charlie Utter.
Well, right now I'm playing Colorado Charlie Utter. He's the one that brought Wild Bill in to Deadwood here in 1876 on his wagon train. He came out of Georgetown, Colorado, dropped down into Denver, picked up 100 people, 70 wagons down there, headed up north, got up to Laramie, picked up a bunch of professional ladies there, Madam Mustache, Dirty M, and their crew. And also there's a gal there by the name of Calamity Jane that hopped on that wagon train. That's the first time I ever met her. There's never a relationship between Wild Bill and Calamity Jane. You know, she was the greatest fabricator in the West. Yeah, and she made her living, as far as drinking, by telling stories. And almost everything we read about Calamity Jane, at least the novels, at least what you see on the movies, Calamity Jane didn't do those things. She talked about doing those things, and she's great at it. Here's the greatest lawman in the West, getting kicked out of town for getting drunk in Cheyenne, of all places, right? And I brought him up here. He's shot on the 2nd of August.
Oh, he was?
He's only here 3 weeks, but look what it did to the tourist trade.
Oh, yeah. How much of the history is real versus, you know,
there is
poetic license?
There is a great deal of poetic license, but it's part of our history.
Right. Even the poetic license is part of it.
Exactly. You know, that is part of it. You hear a lot of different stories. You know, myself, I taught multiple graduate courses on Deadwood history. And what I would do is just keep reading and reading and reading and come up with what is the most common answer to the question. Okay. Majority rules.
Why do you think Deadwood is so compelling? It seems to be kind of, I don't want to say the beginning of Western history, because it is Western history, but it's so interesting that so many things happened here that later became almost Rosetta Stones for almost every story you hear about the West.
You see just a snapshot, a slice of how civilization developed. You had people come here in Deadwood proper, 4,000 to 5,000 people came in 1876. 1875, there wasn't a soul here. But then if you go down towards the end, Elizabethtown, all the towns down there connected to it, and all the way up to the city of Leed, there's close to 10,000 people here, and there's no law. So what you saw was the beginning of a civilization, no law whatsoever. People didn't have a whole lot of rules besides relying on other people they could trust around them. Developed into a system of law. It took a while. It took until a couple of years before we got true law here in Deadwood. And the city started forming into an actual city with a governing body. But you watch that, that moved all the way through until, 1890 switched things around. That's when the railroad came. With railroad came civilization, Eastern civilization, okay, good or bad. And the old Wild West in Deadwood came to a halt once the railroad came into.
Yeah,
and a lot of the guys that are around here, did actually, just like Butch and Sundance. Myself, Colorado Charlie, I headed down to Panama, spent some time down there, told everybody I was a doctor. I wasn't really. And I became a pretty nice, respectable doctor down in Panama, there. Guys like D. Boone May, the greatest of all the stage messengers, protecting the stage. He headed down there and ended up getting bit by a skeeter. Malaria got him. There you go. Zika. Yeah. It's your Zika.
What motivated these guys? How were they really that different from people today, you think?
Well, gold fever was the main reason everybody was showed up here, and they weren't new at it. They went from California, back in 49, 48, in those years, went from there to the Comstock load in Nevada, ended up in places like Idaho, Montana. Anytime there's a gold strike, they ended up here in Deadwood in 76, but these were veterans at it, okay?
They knew what to expect.
They knew
how to profit.
Exactly.
So profit was what drove them.
The miners, they just kept trying and trying, but the true profit, the true money, was mining the miners. The store owners, terribly elevated prices to buy absolutely anything. The saloon owners, Deadwood, right now, has casino after casino. But back in 1876, there was six more casinos than there are right now in Deadwood.
There's a lot of casinos here now.
Oh, yeah.
80-some? Something like that.
They're up and down the street everywhere. And people say, that's all it is the casinos. That's our history. That is our history. That's why the state of South Dakota, this is the only town, besides reservation gambling and possibly riverboat gambling. I don't know if there's any even out there yet. But this is the only town that they allowed to do this. It's because this is the history right here as far as the gambling. It's been here. It's been part of us. And we still have that bad boy image out here. Still got it. I'm just happy as a clam. I've been out here for 32 years in the hills. I've been digging into Deadwood history for all that time. Never can get to the end of it. Never will. It is so deep. And the characters that are here, the whole environment. When gambling came back to Deadwood, part of the deal was that historical preservation would get a portion of that money. And so a lot of those changes that went on and are preserved over the years, we're glad that gambling came. They took everything off the buildings, brought them back to the initial condition. They put in the brick streets. Those were initially put in 1903. Those lamps are the exact same lamps that came here in 1907. And that's all because of historical preservation. You walk down the street and the history just drips out of the buildings.
And it doesn't feel touristy. That's the thing that's cool about it. It feels like a functional town.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is attractive, because it's real. It's not like 1880s town.
No. Yeah.
That's an insult even to say that.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, but you come down here and part of what I do here is help people understand what was here before it burned down. You know, everything in this town burnt down in 1879. All 300 buildings. There's a fire down at the Empire Bakery, and right next to that was a hardware store down the basement, blasting powder. That went off. Every building, but the buildings were made out of sappy wood.
Yeah.
Not kiln dried. Most of them had canvas roofs. The town just went up. It also burned down in 1894. Just all but three buildings in the downtown area here burned down here in 1894. You know, you see a few. That's when they started this building, which is, you know, which made it through the fire. You'll see a few of them 1892, 1893. That's just when they started coming up. But even when they rebuilt the town out of wood again, because they didn't want to lose a nickel taking the money from the miners.
And that was still going on in the 1890s. So really, the whole spirit of Deadwood as an opportunistic kind of place was still active even after it burned down twice.
That's right. And, you know, the other beauty of this town, and you hit it well, is that in 1876, anybody could come. Anybody was here.
Yeah.
And still today, there's a spirit. If you find any prejudicial angles coming out of Deadwood, I would be shocked. You know, because it's a town of total acceptance of behaviors of people. It doesn't make a difference. You know, which to me, it's a wonderful thing. You don't see that enough in America. You know, but right here in Deadwood, it happens. That's been our tradition. We'll carry it on forever.
Thanks.
Well, that's all for this week's installment of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Colorado Charlie Utter and Deadwood. And thanks for listening to this special Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. A lot to think about. Good luck. Visit thebobdavispodcast.com and sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast Bobline newsletter for all the rest of the podcasts. They're right there at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Boop. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. First of all, thanks to Randy Walker for his kind donation recently for Mobile Podcast Command. Really appreciated the donations while I was on the road. If you want to donate to the Bob Davis Podcasts, go to the website, scroll down past the newsletter, sign up. You can also sign up for the newsletter, The Bob Line. You look for the yellow donate button, click on that, and you can donate through PayPal to thebobdavispodcasts.com, and that goes for Mobile Podcast Command support. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher, and tune in if you have an Android device, if you're on a regular iPhone, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And as I mentioned, the donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to this show on The Patriot at AM 1280 in Minneapolis on Sundays at 4 p.m. and also at gcnlive.com. And of course, don't forget xgovernmentcars.com, longtime sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast. If you're looking for a car, if you're looking for a work truck, xgovernmentcars.com, now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, 763-777-8782. If you need a loan, if you have a job, you are approved. They also pay the highest values every day for trades without all the bull, which is great, and they will help you long after the sale. So love those guys at xgovernmentcars.com. Also, don't forget to get your heating checked before the climate change that we call fall and winter, which indeed is coming after the state fair. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too, for four generations. Ask him about high-efficiency heating, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Well, that's it. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 537, this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, number 39. Looks like the laundry's ready to put in the dryer, so I'm going to have to pop that in there.